Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Michael and Patty Show. Wait a second. I shouldn't be introducing this show. We have a new celebrity with us today. Someone that was on CBC TV. Would that be you?
Yes, I was on CBC TV this past week.
And what was that all about?
Just discussing the market and why Prince Edward Island sales were up June 2024 to June 2025. And just a little bit of information around that for the public and consumers.
Did you have a good time?
It was very quick. They kind of just call you up and say, we're meeting with you now, pick a location, and you show up. So there's not a lot of prep time or opportunity, but it was quite the experience.
Well, it's nice to see you on the CBC. And for those that don't know that are planning on moving here, the center of the universe for news is CBC Compass. And that would have been what you were on. That's at 6 o'clock, I believe.
Yes.
Keeps you in touch with everything that's going on the island. If you're new to the show, my name is Patty, and your name's Michael.
Reverse that. I'm Patty.
And we talk about PEI real estate and real estate in general. This basically applies to anyone buying or selling real estate in North America. It's pretty well all the same stuff. We try to keep things as transparent as possible, and we're not here to promote ourselves. We're just trying to help people understand how real estate works, with a special emphasis on Prince Edward Island. The first thing we'll cover is we have a new Facebook group, which is called Moving to Prince Edward Island, not to be confused with many other groups that abbreviate Prince Edward Island, and we actually have 155 members in less than, I guess, 4 days. I didn't realize, you know, when I checked the stats for YouTube and for the podcast and different things, there's a huge demand for people looking at real estate in PEI. It's just amazing how many people are looking to the island, which has pretty well been an unknown. I mean, I lived in Ontario for 29 years. You lived there for 20?
No, I've was there, probably about 25, 30 years off and on, because I moved out to Alberta too.
And how many people did you ever hear talk about, or how many PEI plays did you ever see when you lived in Ontario?
Prince Edward Island, the only time I ever heard the island mentioned was in grade school, when we were having to learn all the provinces' names. Other than that, it just wasn't a discussion. People never mentioned it. But you're absolutely right. I'm really excited about the Facebook group, because what it is it's a continuation of the Michael and Patty Show podcast, where we're going to be providing summaries of each episode. And I'm starting back at episode one. So Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, there's going to be a little snapshot of what each episode is about, plus just information that's going to be provided and shared about PEI, sometimes little questions just to ask what consumers want to know or what was their experience, so that as the community continues to grow, hopefully people feel it's got value. But it was really the Michael and Patty Show that inspired, because we have so many people that do reach out to us, thanking us for all this education and knowledge and information about the island, Michael. It just made sense to have that be the next step.
And a special shout out to Texas. We've had some people from Texas contact us that have a connection with the island, so it's good to hear that we're being listened to down in Texas, where everything is, what's the saying? Everything's bigger in Texas?
Everything's bigger in Texas. Now, I do want to assure, because this was a question that, again, has been asked just a couple times, is this a group that, because Michael and I, and obviously everybody knows, we are licensed real estate agents on PEI. This is not spamming. This is not us soliciting ourselves. If you do end up putting something down about recommending us, I'll just let you know right now, we will be removing it, because that is not what the purpose of this social media community group is about. It really is, again, people that are considering and hopefully make a very educated and informed decision if they are looking to relocate or if they are looking to buy or sell real estate. specifically on PEI.
Let's move on with our first question. So I'm selling my house and someone knocks on the door and they have a bunch of questions for me. They saw the for sale sign out front. What do I do? Your options are slam the door in their face, answer their questions, or politely tell them to contact the name and phone number on the for sale sign out front.
I would say C, and I would also add to that, if you are a seller and your property is listed, because PEI is known for being so friendly, which we are, people do feel, those who travel here, that they can take the liberty of just knocking on our doors if we have a for sale sign to have conversation. So if you are a seller, please don't speak to the buyer, don't share any information, but do ask for a few extra business cards from your agent that you can kindly just hand to the individual and send them on their way, because it's not safe for you to be engaging and maybe letting someone in, and they may be seeking information so that they absolutely love your home, they're already sold on it, and they're trying to get some information that could possibly work against you in a negotiation.
In this particular case, what happened is they knocked on the door and they were talking to the owner of the house and they asked about adding something to the property, which in all likelihood probably would have been anywhere between $2,500 and $10,000. Well, she said, well, you can't do that. That's going to cost you at least $75,000. So guess what happened to the buyer? That was the end of that, because we didn't get a chance to even respond to that in a subjective way and say, no, you can do it a multitude of different ways, and it's probably not going to cost you $75,000. So unfortunately, in that case, we lost the buyer. You have a house for sale.
Okay.
There's a bunch of problems because you're not maintaining it very well. You have 9 kids, 4 dogs, and an elephant.
Okay.
You've got flooring issues, drywall, holes in the drywall, basements leaking. You need a new roof and the driveway needs repair, plus some landscaping. What do you do in a case where you're selling and you do have these deficiencies? They may also be things that maybe if you did a pre-home inspection, the home inspector pointed out. Do you go ahead and fix them all, or what do you do?
Any case that you do get a pre-home inspection, and this is something that we do recommend our sellers do, or if you're a seller looking to sell, it may be a service that your agent provides. But instead of just closing your eyes and hoping that the buyer doesn't find them, because they will end up finding these deficiencies, especially the fun list that you just provided, Michael, I would be recommending to a seller, and if it's me in this case, get a quote for all the items, especially if you are not in a financial position, which apparently in this case scenario, I have 9 kids. I don't have probably the financial capability of fixing them all. But if I have a quote, I can say that I've priced my property accordingly as a result of these deficiencies. And no one on the other side, a buyer, can't inflate the prices to make me look like I'm unrealistic as to the sale price that I've applied to the property.
Why don't you maintain your property?
I guess I'm very busy.
Buyers will always look at a problem or deficiency as the end of the world and a huge number. For instance, they'll look at a roof and think, oh, that's $30,000, $40,000, $50,000. Meanwhile, back at the farm, you can get a quote for a steel roof or maybe a new asphalt roof, and it might be a quarter of that. They're always going to try to inflate those prices to get the price down that they're buying the house for. It's your job to say, no, we've done our research. We know what the property needs. This is what it's going to cost to repair. And that way you're protected from a negotiating standpoint. Make sense?
Yes. And the buyer, again, in the buyer's defense, they may have just reached out to one company. And this one company may be really busy because it's a popular company, or they don't want the job, and they gave such an inflated price, and that's now what they're sold on is this particular number, and that's what they're using against you. Whereas if you do this preemptively prior to listing and you've got a little bit of time to do your due diligence and get a fair value, not to say everyone's going to give an inflated price, but a fair value, hopefully you would be able to, one, say, I've already done the work. which should instill confidence in the buyer. And two, I found a quote from a contractor that I feel is quite reasonable. And if you choose to use company A, that might be higher, that's at your own discretion. I did find a reasonable quote, and this is the number I'm going with.
Good information.
Yes.
When listing a house, there is a series of questions that I have for the homeowners, and there's a number of things that we have to do and decide on, either before listing or at the listing appointment, once you've decided to list with that agent. And I'm going to quickly cover these, because this could turn into a whole episode by itself. So I will rattle off a few, and then if you have any questions or additions.
Yep, absolutely.
Property disclosure, you're going to probably want to fill one of those out, although it's not mandatory. You're going to do your FinTrack. You had a comment about PCDS.
I was just going to say property condition disclosure statements instills confidence in a buyer that a seller has disclosed to the best of their ability information about the property. To not have one, I know because I'm dealing with many buyers. I know, but we're just... So please consider, seriously consider filling out a property disclosure statement.
We're going to fill out a FinTrack statement, which is usually getting your driver's licenses and or passports and identifying what you do for a living, measuring the house inside and out, asking you if you want a sign installed, providing you with the names of the people doing any video and photos, if that's something that's being done. Photo prep talk, staging the house. Do you do that with your client?
Yes, I do.
That's it?
Yeah, it is a conversation that we go through once everything is all in place. And then it is, let's do a walkthrough as to what needs to be done. Because usually I don't have the photographer and the videographer following me around at my listing appointment. So this is going to be a separate appointment. So at the listing appointment, it's a great opportunity at the end to go through, create a list so the seller knows what things to clear out or remove or move to set the photos up to show the home in its best light.
Are you going to offer this as a pre-inspected home? Are you as a homeowner going to pay for this pre-inspection? Is the agent going to pay for it as part of their marketing package? Or are you just going to leave it all willy-nilly and let the purchaser decide who they're going to use as a home inspector and then invariably use that as a negotiating tool to get the price down? Whereas as a pre-home inspected home, I can say we've taken into consideration the pre-home inspection and doing a CMA and or an appraisal. This is how we came out at our asking price, which is more than reasonable.
Or there may be a deficiency you weren't aware of and you can get ahead of it, which will in turn keep more money in your pocket.
Because if there is something that's catastrophic, like that, you know, we've had houses before where the ceilings or the attics were just absolutely filled with black mold because they vented the bathrooms and the kitchen into the attic. Situations like that are best remedied. Or super wet basements or black mold in basements under particularly cottages and structures on posts where no one ever goes down in the basement ever. It's always nice to know about this stuff beforehand, have it fixed, and also sell a product that's viable and taken care of. Enough with the home inspection. When the property's listed, does your agent have a newsletter? And how many people should you expect it to get sent out to? Is it somewhere between 2,000 or 20,000? You have a newsletter. I have a newsletter. We're going to discuss if they're going to be doing video ads, Facebook ads, if you're going to be doing video, if you're going to be doing photos. And the other thing that's always a touchy point is drone photos and video. It's not about having lots of photos and lots of drone photos and video. It's about having the right pictures and video. And a lot of times drones, depending on where you're located, may actually show the property in a negative light. Would you agree with that or strongly agree?
I would strongly agree.
We're going to ask them for any support docs, surveys, the case of land, perk tests, building permits, anything that, say, the furnace was just installed, the oil tank was just installed, the septic system, the well was replaced. Get documents for all these, septic pumping. Get all this sort of stuff. It makes for a nice, neat, clean package. So ideally, what we're looking for from the purchaser is a nice, clean offer, not one that's littered with requirements. Patty?
I completely agree. I was just going to say, with regards to documents, that's one reason why you would want to get supporting documents. The other thing is, if you are a non-Canadian selling your property, it's nice to be, while you're going through this process, one of the things that we, I know I ask for, is to start, and I don't physically need to receive this, just to be clear, but it gives the seller an opportunity to start collecting their receipts and documentation and information, because they will have to satisfy CRA requirements with a clearance certificate. So it's good to kind of get ahead of that, collect those documents. One, it lets, again, instills confidence in the buyer that this is the upkeep and the maintenance that you've been doing over the years, but also CRA is going to be requiring it.
So if you're selling your property, whatever it may be, land, house, structure, cottage, and you're a non-Canadian resident, you will probably be filing a tax return and there will probably be a holdback in and around 25%. And the one thing your accountant may tell you is any costs are expensive, including travel, hotels, gas, food, maintenance, may contribute to a reduction in those capital gains, correct?
Correct.
Different subject, but we covered it anyway, which brings us to HST. If you are either renting this out daily or weekly, you may find there is a 15% sales tax, which is referred to as HST here on the sale of the property.
Yes, and that would be technically, depending on how you listed it, at the purchaser's expense. So you could list the property at a price that includes HST, or you can say, here's the purchase price plus HST, again, depending on your usage.
If you have a cottage and it's been rented out daily or weekly, or you have a house that's been Airbnb'd, you definitely want to talk to a Canadian accountant to see if there's any HST applicability. And as far as the video, we covered this in the last episode. The latest trend is candid video, agent walking through without them being in the frame with good audio. People seem to love these videos. They sell properties. Or are they just going to pick up the phone and have someone drive by and do one of these artistic videos?
Yeah, that's your agent showcasing and showing the property for you.
In less than 3 minutes, or around 3 minutes, they say.
Yeah, it's a challenge to do that. It's very hard to show a property in 3 minutes, but that is what's recommended.
You just talk really fast and walk quickly.
Okay.
This rumor is still out there and has plagued the island for decades. Thank you, PEI government, for having such forethought. The rumor is still going around that people can't buy property in PEI, period. But the rule is actually, if you're buying more than 165 feet of waterfrontage or 5 acres of property, you have to go through IRAC, irac.pe.ca, click on the property tab, it'll tell you everything about it, but you basically make an application to buy this property. However, there has been probably hundreds, if not thousands, of sales that have gone by the wayside because the rumor's still out there, you can't buy property in PEI, and I'm sure in Nova Scotia, which is our main competitor, is probably telling everybody that. And I know they have. And I'd probably do the same thing if I was in Nova Scotia. Probably not.
Well, I'm sure the message would be it's a little more difficult to acquire property on Prince Edward Island.
No, the message is you can't.
I'd be nice here. And that is how I'm going to summarize that.
In fact, this was even on a cut sheet. That's where this comment, this subject came from.
Someone, what did it say?
An agent actually put this on a cut sheet that non-residents couldn't buy the property.
Oh, possibly because it may have been in a red zone on the island. And that was something, hopefully they did their due diligence and spoke with IRAC. That is a thing. IRAC will say they will not allow in certain areas of PEI because they're past their percentage of non-island residents in those areas. So in some ways, I think that might be a courtesy thing to do in the listing if they know definitively that a non-island resident. But I still think due diligence is required because if you're looking to move to Prince Edward Island and make it your home, and live here year round, I'm sure there would be some consideration. So I wouldn't say it's a full stop.
I wouldn't be putting that in the cut sheet because, as you said, it's not definitive. You don't know who the buyer is. Moving along, I did some research and I wanted to ask the question, what are buyers looking for in a real estate agent?
Most buyers are looking for honesty and someone they can trust, but transparency, knowledge in what it is that they are selling and about Prince Edward Island and perhaps the area they're looking in, and experience. They want to know that this major purchase that they're about to do is with somebody that knows what they're doing. That would be my
transparency, knowledge, and experience is what they're looking for, according to the new stats. I think
good.
That was from the Association or National Association of Realtors in the States. So just recently at a house, one of many houses, you know, have you ever had the house that doesn't have a straight line anywhere in the entire house?
Yes. Yeah.
The challenge being is you're representing a square footage, you're representing room sizes. And if you're not measuring a bunch of squares and rectangles, it becomes very difficult. So I was thinking way back when our office was selling properties for large oil companies like Irving, for instance, and they had a Schedule B attached to their properties. So basically what would happen is when you were buying a property from them, they would have you sign a Schedule B. And this is quite common with large corporations. It basically said they're not responsible for anything. You have the opportunity to do your due diligence. But if you elect to enter into this contract, you need to sign off on it. We will not be responsible for anything. And you can do whatever you would like to research the property. So I thought, that's actually a really good idea, because I think you're going to find things are going to become more and more litigious in Prince Edward Island like they have in other provinces and states. So as much as some states, and I'm not sure if it's happened in Canada yet, they're just removing the measurements, period. I don't know if they're doing it for land. They probably should, unless there's a survey, but they're removing the room measurements because there's just too many court cases of people fighting over, I thought the living room was 9x12 and it's only 6x8 or whatever. So this Schedule B, which I created, which I haven't used yet, and I'm not sure if I will, one thing it does do is it does go down an extensive list of things that you should, as a purchaser, check prior to writing a contract. What do you think about that concept?
I think the more insight and knowledge that a buyer is aware that they may not have considered, I should be looking for this, or I should be considering or looking at that, I think would be very helpful to them and very appreciative.
Do you want to whip through this real quick? Here's some of the things you want to look for from a purchaser's perspective. Do not go by what is on the MLS cut sheet.
Okay, so room dimensions and square footage. Again, like you said, Michael, it's not a perfect square, so one corner could get one dimension and the other corner could receive another.
They're cutting you off, Patty.
No. Lot size and property boundaries, location and accuracy of surveys, survey markers, validity, accuracy, and currency of any survey plans, interior and exterior finishes, materials, and constructions. That's the things to look for. Availability, quality, and connection status of utility and services, including but not limited to electricity, telephone service, internet, well, municipal or community water supply, shared wells, septic or sewer systems, heating source and fuel types, garbage collection, school bus service, year-round road maintenance and snow removal, legal access to the property, including during winter months, presence, nature, and enforceability of any restrictive covenants or easements, soil types, and suitability for intended use, construction, agricultural, septic systems, compliance with local zoning, land use bylaws, and building codes, permits for existing structures or improvements, floodplain or environmental risk exposure. And then title and financial considerations. Do you want me to read this?
I can do this one.
Sounds good.
Title and financial considerations. A lot of this stuff will be investigated by your lawyer representing you as the purchaser, but we're going to, you know, check the validity of deed in case of a purchase. Your lawyer is going to be creating a copy of the deed. investigate whether there are liens, encumbrances, charges on the properties, outstanding property taxes, municipal fees. I would be concerned that maybe it's going into foreclosure because property taxes can always be paid, hopefully, probably with a penalty. Presence of an HOA, homeowners association, condo association, corporation or condo fees, HOA fees, HST, GST payable. We just talked about that. Title search, that plays into the deed. Case of vacant land, new construction, review, development agreements, permits, and servicing obligation.
And if I can add to that, by also the buyer's responsibility, ask for the tax report. It'll let you know whether, and again, the property will be reassessed, but are they island taxes? Are they being charged at island tax rate? Or are these non-island tax
rates? What's the difference, Patty?
It comes out to approximately, we receive as island residents, about a third discount on our provincial portion of our property taxes.
So those are some of the things to look for quickly in a nutshell. If you do want the complete list, which is 2 pages long, just email either one of us. Moving along. How many times have you had that high-end waterfront property that has no buyers for it? And they just have this inevitable list of ideas of what you should be doing to market their property, which will probably never sell or take a very long time to sell because people are not looking in that price range here.
Too many times I've pretty much most of them feel like they have the solution or the marketing plan that will get their property sold.
So you get a waterfront property, they list it for $2.5 million, and they say, well, this is a one of a kind. Geez, there must be a long list of people that would buy this. And then you say to them, do you know how many $2.5 million sales there's been in the history of PEI? What, maybe one, two? We aren't moving these things. There's no liquidity in these price markets. And you as a vendor, how do I say this? It's arrogant to think that you're going to come up with a whole list of marketing ideas that that agent, assuming that agent knows what they're doing, they're experienced, they're an expert, they've done over 1,000 transactions, they've been in this business full time for more than 10,000 hours, 5 years. They've probably done the research. They know what's going to work. But some of these ideas are just ludicrous. I mean, you've had them. Oh, advertise it in a magazine that caters to people that like horses. I had one house that had an amateur radio set up. I'm a licensed amateur as well. Advertise it in the ham radio magazines. The list goes on and on and on. These things don't work. And magazine advertising, as we covered in past episodes, is typically a waste of money. Your agent should know where to market your property to get the results. But the fact is, you're in a market that PEI doesn't cater to. We're not moving $5, $10, $15, $20 million, $30 million houses here. And all the advertising in the world is not going to change that demographic.
Completely agree along with you. I've had people want me to advertise in the Globe and Mail. I've had people wanting it advertised in certain areas of the US or Canada because they have family or friends from that area. And they've been told, oh, if that place was here.
Oh, yeah, if that place was here. What a stupid thing to say.
Yeah. Well,
then move it there.
So therefore, they feel the people in that particular location or community would see the value. I've actually had a client, a non-Canadian client, advise or strongly recommend. I released this listing because of this request. They felt a certain country on this planet would have paid 10 times the property value just because of the story of the Anne and Green Gables here. And they wanted me to specifically advertise in this country. And with a clear conscience, I couldn't even sell this property and still sleep at night, knowing that I've allowed a buyer to pay such an outrageous inflated price. So we mutually agreed, I'm not the agent for them.
And the fact is, if you're this super wealthy person living in fantasy land and you're thinking about buying this property in PEI because you tripped across a magazine advertisement, don't you think you'd have enough sense just to get it appraised?
I would agree.
The other one I like is we're listing with a commercial real estate agent or we're going to list with an agent in Halifax or Montreal. Well, good luck with that too. That's all been tried. That's never worked. Oh, I have contacts in Europe. Bonjour. Est-ce que c'est France? I have a house for sale in PEI. Would you like to buy it? What's French for no? No.
Yeah, they're, if it's somebody that's considering Canada and then more hyper-local or our province, Prince Edward Island, I think they would be looking on, you know, different platforms and sites, realtor.ca. Just because we threw it in their local newspaper that morning isn't going to make them alter their entire life and say, wait a minute, I never even knew this existed. Let's sell our
house. Where's the checkbook?
Yes.
Moving along. How many times have you seen that piece of property? Let's just say it's a piece of acreage. It's fairly remote. It's in a rural area. It's treed. And the write-up just says, nice woodlot. I came across that last week and I thought, that's not very compelling. And then I thought to myself, this piece of woodlot, which is fairly inexpensive, I think it was $20,000, $30,000 for 10, 20, 30 acres, but it was around some nice beaches. There's golf courses around there. It's 20 minutes to the closest city. I know there's walking trails. It's close to the ATV trails. It's close to where the rail to trail trails is, but none of this was in the write-up. So when you are writing up a write-up of a piece of woodland, rather than putting nice woodlot, which doesn't really compel people, because what we're trying to do is we're trying to write a description based on emotion and lifestyle, which includes the area, what it's close to, and if you wanted to get into technicalities, mention what type of wood there. You've seen that. That's common. Hardwood, softwood, birch, pine, fir, whatever. Seasonal pictures, that's the other thing I've seen. You ever seen a woodlot and it's in July and it's covered in snow? Obviously, there's somewhere on the island that has high altitude mountains that I'm not aware of. Or these pictures are old and should be replaced, which if you are a seller, you should be watching realtor.ca to see what marketing materials, pictures, and or video descriptions being used to know if you're giving your property or presenting it in the best light.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, the best representation of your property to hopefully attract, one, a buyer, and a buyer at the price point that you've got it offered on the market for.
I'll let you cover these two quick points here.
Okay. If you are going to send us an email, and Michael, I totally agree along with this, please include your phone number. And if it can be texted, if it's a landline or if it is a cell phone number, we do receive too many emails without phone numbers. And the problem with that is we get many people that are just house couch shoppers, and they will send, click the button on realtor.ca, which is super easy, looking for more information, looking for more information. And there's no phone number to allow us the opportunity to really make sure what is it that you're looking for, because there's a lot of information that we're able to provide on realtor.ca, which is the price, and there's photos, and a lot of times there's video, and the taxes are most cases available. So we don't know what you're looking for, and if there's no phone number, we could be sending you all the wrong information. So,
or the questions are so involved that short of writing a novel to respond, it's just easier to do it on the phone quick. Additionally to that, if we're sending you PDF files and videos and links and mapping tools and all this sort of stuff, it may get flagged as spam. So the text allows us to text you and say, hey, Patty, I sent you an email. If you didn't receive it, let me know. Neither one of us hound any of these people. It shows a level of legitimacy to the email and allows us to confirm these emails have been sent if they have attachments.
Yes, and to confirm that we are working in this business, and that you don't assume, well, I sent this agent an email through realtor.ca and they never responded, whereas they may have responded. Maybe perhaps the email wasn't correct, or perhaps, again, it went to your spam bin. It's really important to us as real estate professionals that you receive the information that you're looking for. So send a phone number along with it. Realtor.ca, the ability to see more tours. There's 3D, 2Ds. There's so much on.
What this is I ran a test the other day, because on our system, which is Paragon, we have a multitude of links for virtual tours. You've seen that on the bottom?
Yes, I have.
But in the past, it wasn't doing anything with them. So this time what I did, just for something to do, is I created a 2D tour where you walk around the house and you can see the rooms. And I attached it in addition to the video, and it actually did show up the second link. So when you're looking at realtor.ca, look for these additional links, because there may be some more information shared these days, because these links are now getting shared through realtor.ca from our system.
And we do have the option to share documents, additional links, like you said.
But that doesn't show up except on Collab.
So. No, there is a button that, I don't know when the last time you inputted a listing.
But I know the button's there, but what I'm saying is it doesn't traverse to realtor.ca.
Yes, it does. And that's what I'm about to say, is there's a button that allows you to click for public access, not just through Collab. So
I know that. But where in realtor.ca does it show up?
So you're saying it only shows up on collaboration?
It only shows
sites?
Up on Collab. If you want the best way to look for real estate anywhere, get a search set up, which we refer to as a Collab. You enter your real estate agent enters your parameters. You get emails with anything that comes up from any agent, any broker. So what we're saying is Patty's saying is, if you check the little box that says share with public, if you have one of these searches set up, you'll see those documents. I haven't seen anywhere in realtor.ca that has this information.
I will check that out.
You do this
Stay
and report
tuned.
Back to us today.
Do you want me to read this? So agents constantly changing firms. I'm just going to read this as...
I think the point of this is we see agents like they're with one brokers, another brokers, another brokers. The rule of thumb is after your third brokerage, you're gone. You're out of business. Because what you're searching for as an agent, I don't know what. I think it's like they think there's a pot of gold at the end of a rainbow at a certain brokerage. The problem is not your broker. The problem is you, and you're not educating yourself. That is the point of this. Would you agree?
Yes. Some of it's you have to take responsibility as an independent entrepreneur, business owner, to seek out education and knowledge. And I know sometimes the reason people will bounce, one, they may not have found their home, in their defense. Maybe they just haven't found
their
people.
That's fair enough, if they don't click.
Yes. So there could be that situation that may be why, one reason why. Another is maybe you expected a higher level support. And again, whatever kind of arrangement commission splits that are being offered, sometimes the more, the higher the split in the favor of the agent may mean you're more responsible for your own education in that.
I find the main reason agents continuously change brokerages is they're looking for leads and they're looking sometimes for education. But the fact is, the most important thing you can do is educate yourself. There is a multitude of ways to do this online like never before, or in person. Patty and I have actually been in California, Florida, Arizona, Nevada, Texas, did I mention Florida, Ontario, Nova Scotia, New Brunswick, and Prince Edward Island in person for education. Every time you attend one of these, sometimes we're there for 3, 4, 5, 6 days, we come back with some great info. This is not your broker's job to motivate you to educate yourself. You can do this stuff even from behind your computer. And once you do educate yourself, you can produce leads just by cranking up your marketing budget. How many leads do you want? Geez, we had over 1,000, 1,400 leads at one point. Because it's scalable and you learn how to do this. You shouldn't rely on someone else to hold you by the nose and direct you where you should go for education.
Yes. Moving along.
Do not copy data from old cut sheets.
Oh my gosh, I totally agree.
I listed a house that was 2,100 square feet. On the old cut sheet, it said 4,000. I think they're looking at it from a satellite image. And they're also using software to scan the room measurements and stuff, which looks cool, but it's not very accurate. in most cases.
Yeah. So if you're a seller listening and you're saying, because I've had so many sellers, and I'm sure, Michael, you've heard this from sellers as well. Sellers will say, well, I have the information sheet from when I bought. The square footage on there is X, whatever it is. And they just think we can just copy that and transfer it over. Well, that's taking the previous seller's information and the previous listing agent's information and assuming they are correct. We assume liability, we being, say, the listing brokerage, as well as that seller who will be signing off on what has been determined as the square footage. We do not want to take responsibility for someone else's mistakes. So your listing agent and you as a seller need to make sure that you do your due diligence and they measure all the rooms. It is the buyer's responsibility, as we said at the beginning of this naming off Michael's Schedule B that he has created, that that's one of the things that a buyer should perhaps reconcile, especially if it's very important to them, and just make sure. But the listing brokerage seller does assume some responsibility, especially a discrepancy as large as the one that you're saying, Michael. Say a 2,300 square foot home was, you know, disclosed to be 3,000 or 4,000 because they included a basement finished area that wasn't finished from floor to ceiling.
And the garage.
And the garage,
the shed,
which we do not on Prince Edward Island consider garage space to be included as living space.
What if it's grandma's apartment?
Well, that is different if it is an actual setup that...
What if it's grandma's apartment, but there's a door and I park my car with grandma?
I feel really sorry for grandma. Not cool.
We'll wrap it up.
Thanks again for listening to another episode of the Michael and Patty Show, otherwise known as MAPS, Prince Edward Island's podcast that helps guide and navigate you through the buying and selling and everything Prince Edward Island. We appreciate each and every one of you for listening, downloading our podcast. And again, if you are listening brand new, we only had this. Well, by the time this episode is released, the podcast Facebook group was created the third week of July 2025. If you're looking for a little bit more of a timestamp as to how long it's been going. Michael?
Thanks for listening and putting up with us. Have a great day. And if you have any questions about Prince Edward Island real estate, moving to PEI or PEI in general, or real estate in general, text, message either one of us. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Enjoy your day. Thanks for listening.